So it's described that in the material world there's unlimited universes, and this is one of those universes, and in the universe there's 14 worlds. So she goes through the Svarga, she comes to the earth, and she goes to the nether worlds for what? Cheto dharpana marjanam. She's here out of her kindness to purify all of us. So her very presence here makes this land, this place of Rishikesh, all auspicious. And that's why the yogis of yore, they chose to come here. Because traditionally yoga should be practiced in a holy place. Because the environment is conducive to higher thoughts. And the whole purpose of the yoga system is to still the mind so that we can think of higher thoughts. We're madly chasing the ephemeral pleasures of this world, experiencing them through our material senses. But those senses are never pacified. As much as we try to enjoy, we're still left hankering. The boy's a little bit disrupted. Maybe mommy could take him. Yeah. Just like if you try to extinguish a fire, you can put water on the fire and extinguish it. But if you pour kerosene is also a liquid. If you pour kerosene on the fire, what happens? The fire becomes stronger. So when you try to pacify the demands of the senses, the ear, the eye, the nose, the tongue, the belly, and the genital, these are the senses by which we come in contact with this world. If you try to pacify them with sense gratification and material enjoyment, you don't pacify them. The senses become more agitated, even into old age. It's not becoming an old man or an old woman to try to enjoy this world, but because of a lack of spiritual knowledge, even in old age, people are trying to squeeze some last pleasure out of life. The men, they go golfing, and the ladies play bingo and things like this, and television and movies. But life is not meant for that. Life is meant for tapasya. Tapasya means austerity. Vachavegam, manasakrodavegam, jivavegam, upashtavegam. We're meant to control the senses, and by controlling the senses, taking only what is required to keep body and soul together. That, not that we renounce everything, but we take according to our need, not according to our greed. We take like that. And we practice controlling the senses through either Hatha Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, Raja Yoga, or Bhakti Yoga. All the yogas are meant for controlling the senses. The Hatha Yoga is they draw the senses in just like the turtle. She draws when there's danger. She draws in her legs and her head and her tail, and nothing can touch her. She's safe like that. So the yogis, they stop the senses. The bhakti yogis, they control their senses by engaging in their senses in the service of the divine couple, Radha and Krishna. We're active yogis. Krishna says, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you give away and sacrifice should be done as an offering to me. So our senses are controlled by engaging them in the service of the divine couple. This is bhakti yoga. A little bit easier than trying to bring the senses within. We're active by nature. The soul is active by nature, so the soul should be active in the process of serving God, serving the Supreme. So that devotional activity, that generally goes on in Vrindavan. Vrindavan, Jagannath Puri, Mayapur, this is where the bhakti yogis live, and they're very active, going to the temple, seeing the deity, cooking for the deity, dressing the deity, going to the river, bathing, serving in so many different ways, seva, 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 seva. Rishikesh, this is for our brothers and sisters who choose the path of Ashtanga, pulling the senses in and coming here. Because why? It's very quiet here. When I first came here in 1971, this was a dusty little village. Dusty little village. Just a few buildings, I remember. This building was here. This was built in the 40s, I think. A few buildings were here. And there were some genuine yogis. Now we think because of the tourism, those great souls have gone to Devaprayag, or they've gone to Gangotri, Yamunotri, Kedarnath, Badrinath, as high as you can go and survive as a human being. You can go higher, but too cold. And if you go higher and higher, the Himalayas actually go to the heavenly planets. That we can't see with our material senses, but when we awaken our spiritual senses through the process of bhakti yoga, you can see those Himalayan mountains going up to Brahmaloka and Shivloka, Tapaloka, all the way to the barrier of the material world. It's the Himalayas. Krishna says, of mountains, I am the Himalayas. But in days of yore, this was good enough. The foothills. Yoga shouldn't be too extreme. Krishna says in the Gita, the yogi doesn't sleep too much or sleep too little. The yogi doesn't eat too much or eat too little. It's not meant to be, not tyagis. Tyagis are those who realize the futility of material life, so they just renounce everything, and they're extremely skinny, and they never cut their hairs, their nails, they eat very little. They surround themselves by fire in the summer. They immerse themselves in the cold water during the winter to become detached from the material world. Only 1%. We talk about the 1% in human society, those who have all the money. But there's a 1% in the spiritual life also. Those tyagis are to be respected because of the renunciation. But this was the place of the yoga, because you look at the weather here. A little cool at night, so you bundle up and get a good nap. And warm during the day. This is perfect for yoga. You drink the Ganges, you bathe in the Ganges. They used to pick the fruits from the trees. Here the fruits would grow at this level. Fruits from the trees, they take the roots from the ground. This is enough. Most of the time, in the caves. Here, I've climbed these mountains when I was young. There's caves. There's caves here. And they would sit. Solitude, totally celibate. Not only men, but also yoginis, women, but no sex. It is lust only, Arjuna, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy in this world. Yoga means to control the sex drive as well. Because although their pleasure is there, you could say it's the highest pleasure in material life, it's binding us to the bodily concept. I'm enjoying through my body, but aham brahmasmi. I'm not the body. So celibacy is required. But you can't be celibate unless you're experiencing a deeper spiritual pleasure within. You can only give up something if you get something better. So intellectually, we may appreciate how important it is to be vegetarian, how important it is to remain celibate, how we should not gamble, how she would not speculate or take in talks, but we may not be able to do it because old habits die hard. So how to become detached from those things which actually are detrimental to spiritual enlightenment? By experiencing a higher taste. In this age, that taste comes immediately in this hall. When we're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare. Did you see the kirtan last night? Even you take drugs, you can't do that. Even you drink liquor, you can't do that. What is this magic in the form of this mantra? Kali Kali Noom, Kali Kali Nam Rup Krishna Avatar. We speak about avatars who come from the spiritual world to remind us who we are. Throughout the eons of time, so many avatars have come, and they have their followers, and they have their perfection. In this age, Kali Kali Nam Rup, Krishna Avatar, Rup means form, Kali Kali Nam Rup. In the age of Kali, the avatar who comes to deliver us is Krishna in the form of his name. When you say Hare Krishna, Krishna is present in that sound vibration. He's dancing on the tip of your tongue. And why? Because he's the reservoir of all pleasure. You're actually experiencing the highest pleasure. If you took all the pleasure of this material world, all that pleasure, and you could do it, you put it on one scale. from Svargalok down through this planet, even to the hellish regions, they have some pleasure. You put it all in one scale, and you put one syllable of the holy name, Ha, Rama, or Her, Re, Krishna, on the other side. Boom! This side would outdo the pleasure of the material creation. Isn't that interesting? That's how powerful the Maha Mantra is. We don't realize because we're like babies, and we're infants. All of us are infants in spiritual life. And what does an infant know? Very little. But mommy knows, daddy knows. So the spiritual masters, like our father, he's like our father. And he takes us by the hand and leads us in the first step. To come in contact with a bona fide spiritual master is actually very rare. Remember when I first came in contact with devotees, Vishnu John Maharaj, he was the first devotee I met. I said, tell me about Krishna. He said, no. First I'll tell you about my spiritual master. Because Krishna says in Vedic scriptures, one who says he's my devotee is not my devotee. But one who says he's my, one who's the devotee of my devotee, he's my devotee. Our search should not be for the absolute truth, for the supreme, the divine, Krishna, it should be for that person who can lead us in that direction. But that's very rare. Vishnu John Maharaj told me, he said, he gave a very nice analogy, because analogies help us understand deep philosophical truths. We're beginners. What do we know? A, B, C, D, E, F, G, X, Y, Z. We don't know very much. We're like children, right? Learning the alphabet. So he said, think of it like this. He said, think that there's a turtle, and you put him in some part of the Pacific Ocean, because, well, that's where I'm from, the Pacific Ocean, San Francisco. So you take a turtle and you put him somewhere in the vast Pacific Ocean, then you fly in an airplane somewhere else in the Pacific, and you throw out an inner tube. You know an inner tube? It's the inside of a tire. They still make tires like that? I don't know. Okay, you take an inner tube and you throw it somewhere up by Alaska, and you put the turtle down by Mexico. It's all the Pacific. Now, what are the chances that the turtle will come up for water and his head will pop through the space in the inner tube? You know, there's a space. It's a vast ocean, and the waves are moving, and the inner tube's going here and there, and turtles, you know, how far can a turtle swim? What are the chances that the turtle's head will come up? That's how rare it is to come in contact with a soul who can lead us from darkness to light, from ignorance to truth, from the material world to the spiritual world. And that person is our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. I think some people are looking to come in. Maybe we can have a devotee out there to welcome if they'd like to come in. That's our spiritual master. So rare. It's stated that one cannot find a pearl on the head of every elephant. One cannot find rubies, you know, valuable rubies, in every mountain. One cannot find sandalwood trees in every forest. And one cannot find the association of saintly persons, like all of you, in every birth. It's a very nice analogy. There are pearls on the heads of elephants. Pearls come about in different ways. Pearls come from oysters, as we know. Right? Any of you girls have wearing pearls? Pearls come from the oysters in the ocean. According to Vedic scriptures, another type of pearl comes when there's a particular astrological constellation in the sky, right? Because there's different favorable and unfavorable constellations, astrological periods. There's good periods and bad periods. You may be going through K2 or Saturn, or you may be in Venus. Or, you know, we all know that little bit of astrology. So when there is a very favorable constellation and it rains at a particular auspicious place, a body of water, those raindrops turn into pearls. Don't think it's fantasy, it's mythology. These things we don't see because it's Kali Yuga. But it's true. There are pearls that come from the raindrop hitting the water, pearl. The elephant, the old elephant, 100 years old bull elephant, by the chemical composition in his skin and by the nerves which are activated by the brain and his desire, because elephants are very intelligent. It's stated, and this is no offense to either the elephant or respected ladies, it said that an elephant and a woman never forget an offense which is committed to them. Just nice. Elephants are extremely intelligent. If you're kind to an elephant, he'll remember you 30 years later. If you're offensive to an elephant, he'll also smack you 30 years later. So elephants, they, you know, white elephants were a sign of royalty, actually. And they had so many services to do, even for deities. They would take the murtis from the temple on their heads and parade them proudly around the temple grounds. Elephants are an integral part of Vedic culture. Unfortunately, like many things in Vedic culture, they're disappearing now. It's horrible to think, because of their ivory, which Chinese people and other people think have some chemical properties to increase one's lusty desires. How terrible is this age? Anyway, a 100-year-old elephant produces a pearl. Not something like a pearl. Not something that resembles a pearl, but a pearl. If you take the pearl of an oyster, you take the pearl that's come from raindrops, it's a pearl. Very, very rare. When I was in Tibet 2 years ago, I went to an ashram very high in the mountains where boys are trained from the age of 5 to 25 to be renounced monks. And they can't speak for 11 years. They can't speak for 11 years. Only mauna, silence. So, you know, boys speak a lot. So they don't speak nonsense. They don't speak. They only listen to the guru for 11 years. And there was one bodhisattva. Bodhisattva in Buddhism means a soul. Like Krishna comes and ete chamsa kolo pumsha krishnashtu bhagavan swayam. Krishna's avatari, and from Krishna come so many incarnations of God and so many empowered souls to remind us who we are. So Buddha is one of those incarnations of Krishna who came for a particular time, a particular purpose, with a particular message. So in Buddhism, Buddhism is not so theistic, it's more impersonal. But it's stated that a perfected soul in Buddhism, he doesn't reach perfection and not enlighten others. Sometimes when they reach perfection, that we don't see them again, they merge. But there's some Buddhists who have this deep compassion for those who are in ignorance in this world. They're called bodhisattvas, and they take birth again and again and again and again and again. They never reach the perfected, well, you could say the stage of emerging. They keep taking birth again. So I visited this ashram, and the head of the ashram said, "We have one bodhisattva. He'll be speaking this evening in the temple. All 1,000 boys, well, the 1,000 boys, they will all come to hear. Not speak, but they will hear. Yes, boys." And they went. They didn't go, yeah. So I went to that meeting. It was very high. It was freezing cold. I was wearing a down jacket and down pants, and the boys were just in a little chatter. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om. I worship he who appeared on top of the lotus flower, Lord Buddha. I was also chanting Om Mani Padme Hum because they were so disciplined. I wanted to learn discipline from these boys. So I had my beads, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. I could feel the presence of Buddha. Anyway, So I, you know, this is a bodhisattva. This is a fully enlightened. I think, well, you know, I can learn something. Buddhism is a different philosophy, but we have many things in common. Meditation, renunciation, austerity. So I let me grab something from them. Discipline. All the bodhisattvas, but this old man, this old soul. I'm waiting. And there's the Vyasa-san, the respected seat. So all the kids are all, you can see they're all excited. And all of a sudden, a little boy, a seven-year-old boy, walks out on the stage. Oh, he's going to clean the Vyasa-san. He sat on the Vyasa-san. I said to my friend, the Mahant, I said, you better get the boy off before the Bodhisattva comes. He said, he is the Bodhisattva. What? He's 7 years old. He said, but he's Bodhisattva. He's not seven. He said, he's eternal. I said, okay. And he said, he knows you're here. So he's going to speak in English. I said, how does a seven-year-old Tibetan boy know English? He said he was born with these properties. He spoke perfect 18th century British English. Whilst, how they say, whilst we are here. I was like, what? And he gave a lecture on reincarnation. Perfectly in line with our philosophy because reincarnation is a universal principle. He spoke very nicely. And afterwards, I asked to meet him. He said, no, he's going to deep meditation, but he gives you his blessings. I said, okay, thank you. So anyway, that's a little side story. Bodhisattva. These things are still happening in Kali Yuga. Still some remnants of Vedic culture. So he took me to the place where all the Buddhist saints were placed in samadhi. In Vedic culture, if the guru or the saint passes away, because they use their body fully in the service of divine life, their body is considered divine. Like you take, we've been given an example, you take cold steel and put it in fire. What was the example I gave the other day? It comes out like fire. So someone who uses their body in Ashtanga, Raj Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, that body is transformed. It's not material. It may look material, but it doesn't act material. So when a saint dies, they don't cremate him. You'll never cremate a saint. You place the body in samadhi under the ground, whole, and you come and you can pray at the samadhi. And there's communication between you and the saint. This is something that common sense, that logic cannot comprehend. That's why Samadhi Mandir, Guruji, Samadhi Mandir, you can go and you can pray to your guru and there will be reciprocation. How does logic understand? But you can't understand the absolute truth with logic. Logic has its limits. At the end of creation, that's where logic stops. After that, everything is mystical. Everything is spiritual. Everything is devotional. So the saints are not placed in, they don't burn the body, samadhi, like our Guru Maharshi or Prabhupada. For us, the most holy place in India is Prabhupada's samadhi in Vrindavan. For us, that's as holy as all holy spots in India and everything, because he is the one who is enlightening us about these facts of spiritual life. Even after his departure, the guru continues to guide the disciple through the transcendental medium. That disciple should understand, because guru is not here forever. But by the arrangement of Krishna, the guru continues to guide Manjari, her guru Sridhar Maharaj, and Prabhupada, and the saints. She feels the inspiration from inside. It's something mystical. And to get that qualification to understand the mystical, you have to purify yourself. You have to chant from your heart, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Nama, Hare. So while I was there, they took me to the samadhis. It was such a powerful experience. I could feel the energy there. Being in the association of these samadhi mandirs were 1,000 years old, 1,500. Buddha appeared 2,500. Some of them were maybe his direct disciples in Tibet. My hair was standing on end. I was just like, whoa. And then adorning One of those samadhis was the pearl from the head of the elephant. Now, I've seen pearls. I use pearls, although I'm a monk, I'm a renounced monk. I have pearls which I used in the service of Krishna. I have very beautiful deities of Radha and Krishna and Sringadeva and Govardhan and different deities, Lakshmi, Saraswati, Hanuman. So I use the pearls and diamonds and gold. And that's their property. I'm just dressing them. So I know what pearls look. I know the weight. I know the feel of a pearl. The Mahant, he took the pearl and put it in my hand. And it was warm. It was cold there, but it was warm. I said, "It's warm." He said, "No, yes, yes." He said, "Like, what do you think? It should be cold? It's something divine. I'm holding it, and it's like cold, and then it feels like wet, like liquid in it." And I gave it back to him. And that liquid, it's kind of a moist, like, and then I went like this. Hoping. You know, beg, borrow, steal, but wherever you can get it, get divine mercy. So it's very rare to find the pearl on the head of an elephant. Very rare to find rubies in every mountain on the planet. Very rare to find sandalwood trees in Arizona. Sandalwood trees in Scotland. Sandalwood trees in KwaZulu-Natal, where I go. You don't find. They have the jungle. It's all jungle. You don't find sandalwood trees. Malaysia, different places you find. If you find, you smell. I was in Malaysia, and I walked through sandalwood. It was like they were burning incense. Rare. So you don't find saints in every birth. So those things, compared to a saint, they're nothing. Because what do you get from a saint? That we learn from this verse. Prabhupada quoted this verse several times, but I don't know the source. Janame janame sabe pita matapaya Krishna guru nahi mili bhajahariye. I've quoted that many times, right? Everyone gets a mother and father in every birth. Meaning even animals get mom and dad. But if one gets the benediction of Krishna and Guru, he can conquer the material energy and return back to Godhead by serving the Lord. So our first birth is from our respected parents. You know, to get the human birth is so rare. Out of the millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of species, to take birth as a human is in of itself a benediction. Because animals are conditioned to doing four things. At any time of the day, a cat, a bird, an insect, a butterfly, my favorite species outside of humans, I love butterflies. It's one of my attractions I have to give up. Monarch butterflies. Whenever I see a monarch butterfly or a ladybug, it's a good omen. Something's going to happen. I don't know why, but anyway. Any species of life, at any time of the day, they're either eating, they're sleeping, they're having sexual intercourse, like you see the monkeys in Vrindavan. It's almost embarrassing. Or fighting. Eating, sleeping, mating, or defending. Or mating, or eating, or defending. You never see a bird or a cat or a dog in a church or a mosque or a synagogue or a temple. Why? Because they don't have that birthright. Their karma is such they have to live in that lower species of life until they live out their karmic reactions. Then again they get a human birth. It's never that you're condemned to hell forever for one lifetime of sin. Krishna's so kind, you always get another chance and another chance and another chance. So you always get a human birth. And what's the benefit of a human birth? Buddhi. Buddhi means intelligence. Like I said, Buddha means the enlightened one. You get intelligence. And with that intelligence, you can understand your deeper spiritual nature. And that's the only business of human life. Otherwise, samsara. What is samsara? Samsara means the repetition of birth and death. If you have the slightest attraction to anything in this world, even the slightest iota of attraction, by nature's law, you have to take birth again to fulfill it. So we have to become renounced of all attraction to this world and give our attraction only to Radha and Krishna. Because if we awaken our love for the divine couple when we die, then we go straight to the spiritual world. So we are indebted to mom and dad. I mean, I feel so bad how I treated my parents when I was a teenager. I really didn't appreciate. My mom used to say when I was bad, my dad, mow the lawn, my dad. So my mom washed the dishes, nap, I'm going to go out and play baseball with my friends. My mom would say, son, I'm growing older. Don't you remember how many times I changed your diapers? And they weren't the diapers like they have in modern times. They were cotton diapers. I had to wash all your stoolies. Ah, mom, that's your duty. You're the mom. My dad said, do you know how hard I worked all these years? I'm ready to send you to college. You don't even want to go to college. I felt so, and then they passed away, and I never really said thank you. I feel so bad now. That's why if, you know, why you have your loved ones here, you have to show your affection for them. Even if there's some difficult times in those relationships, that's all right. Love reigns supreme. So we got this human birth. So our first birth is into the womb of our mother. It's a birth into material nature. And we celebrate that birth every year. This is really ignorance. I'm celebrating that I came to a world which is characterized by birth, disease, old age, and death. You can't say they don't exist. Even science and technology, they can't change. Has science and technology conquered birth, disease? No. They may make it a little easier. You can take birth, you can give birth underwater or something. Or you can have an epidermal in the back. Lady can have a shot in the spine so she doesn't feel the pain. You can make it a little easier. You can make death a little easier. They can make you unconscious. Disease. They can cut out the cancer, make your life a little longer. But old age, you can wear the makeup, you know, look a little, get the facelift. Like I had an operation on this side of my face to remove a cancerous tumor. So then it was really flat like that, and then this side looks older. If you look closely, I had a facelift on the right side, and this side's older. The doctor said, would you like to do the other side? I said, I'm too old for that. I don't care how I look. I'm over that. I want to know, what is my spiritual form? Who am I in Krishna Leela? Am I a cowherd boy? Am I a cow? Am I a parrot? Or am I gopi? It's too soon to say you want to be a gopi, but I do want to be a gopi. I really do. I want to be with Radharani. I should shut up now, I'll get in trouble. So you can put off old age a little bit, but you can't stop these things. And that's the thing, that's a good thing about growing old and getting disease, like I wrote in one of my diaries recently. You know, you give up trying to enjoy this world and you take full shelter of Krishna. You'll see you're all young, you still have some attraction, young and beautiful. And when the body gets old, like, oh, forget it. I'm not going to put makeup on anymore. Who cares? Put the makeup on, I look stupid. I'm trying to be young. Grow old gracefully, chanting Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Rama. Anyway, our girls are not attached. And you should look beautiful for Krishna. One time, one of the girls said, why don't we shave our heads like the boys? And Prabhupada said, the girls should be beautiful for Krishna. You're Krishna's gopis. So, so these things are there, so then we should... why celebrate our birthday? Today I'm 21. Let's have a party. What? It's my birthday. Excuse me. You took birth in the material world, and you're not yet spiritually enlightened. You're like an animal.
What? You're calling me an animal?
Yeah, an animal is born into ignorance, he lives in ignorance, and he dies in ignorance. A human being is born into ignorance, but he should live a life of enlightenment and die enlightened. Unless that, then you're just like a cat or dog. Sometimes the sadhus, they call your cat, your dog, cochon. Cochon means like a pig.
What?
Well, if you're only eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, you're cochon.
No, but I'm...
Yeah, but do you know who you are? Do you know who is God? Do you know your intimate relationship? Do you know your... Are you acting? Are you following a resident of Vrindavan in your bhav, in your mood? So nothing, but this birth today, Manishi's taking her second birth, and he's also taking second birth. This is real birth, because this is a birth, a spiritual birth. This is a birth of enlightenment, a birth into spiritual life. They have a spiritual father who will teach them the process of not how to enjoy this world, but to how renounce this world, and to go back to that world, which is what? Eternal, full of knowledge and bliss, where every word is a song, every step is a dance, and there's a festival every day. So we're indebted to our material parents. How much more indebted are we to be to the guru who enlightens us on the path of spiritual life? How much more we must be indebted? So indebted. It's stated that you can never repay the debt to the guru. Because what does the guru do? At the moment of initiation, the guru absorbs all the karma of the disciple. What? Who in his right mind would want, you know, we have our own karma. Who would want to take on someone else's karma? Or two people, or now 6,843 people's karma. It's a burden of love. You want to have children? You know, after you have the children, it's all, I want a baby. And the baby comes, you don't sleep for 2 years, you know, your baby's always on your breast, you feel like a cow, changing the diapers, it's, But you do it because it's a burden of love. You love your children, you love your husband, you love your family. So when a spiritual master takes disciples, it's an order from his guru. After the guru passes away, then the senior disciples are meant to continue to initiate, to keep the tradition going, to pass on the knowledge. So you have to accept them as a burden of love. So how does the guru take on karma, which causes so much suffering? If you take on karma, it means you're taking on karmic reaction. It's like, you know, spoiled food. Like yesterday, I took some tea. And now I have a germ in my body and I have dysentery. It's a burden of love. I don't mind. I don't blame anybody. But if you take karma, it's like taking food. It's putrefied and you suffer. Sometimes the spiritual master has to suffer. Sometimes he has to see a bad dream. So how does he not become overwhelmed by the disciple's karma? Because he knows a secret. When you chant Hare Krishna, it destroys more karma than you can create in a million lifetimes. How indebted we are to the holy name. You chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram. Just one holy name burns up more karma than you committed in 10 million lifetimes. Then why am I still suffering? Because you have been in this material world since time immemorial. We can't count how many births we've had. We think 3 or 4 or 5, no. It goes back so far, even the most sophisticated computer cannot compute how many lives you've been here. You have to keep chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Or you take diksha. You take initiation. And Prabhupada said, the slate is clean. Like, you know, remember school, the blackboard, and they have the erasers? I don't know, today it's different. They have those pens and the. When I was young, it was a chalk. So when you take initiation, a clean slate, there's no karma. So sometimes devotees undergo difficulties, but those are sent by Krishna personally. It's not karma. When there's a difficulty, Krishna knows this. She's getting a little attached to this world. Let's give her a bad cold. Achoo! Oh, I hate this world. I want to become a devotee. Okay, there you go. The hardest lessons are the ones best learned. So then how does Guru do what? Guru has to be a very determined chanter. One symptom of a bona fide spiritual master, he's addicted to chanting. As much as a person is addicted to heroin in a bad way, a Vaishnava or a Vaishnavi, because Vaishnavis also give shelter. They have to be as addicted to the holy name as a man is addicted to heroin. That you have to see in your spiritual master. That they love the holy name. They worship the holy name. They can't stop chanting the holy name. And they can't stop giving the holy name to others, knowing that holy name will relieve others of suffering. Like you see the people. They're not suffering. They're enjoying when they're in there. And they're getting free from karma. But to get free from all karma, you have to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master in disciplic succession. What's more, by chanting Hare Krishna, those desires, lust, anger, greed, jealousy, those things which cause us to do those things which cause karma, are just sent to a distant place. But to get prema, you have to take the initiation in the disciplic succession. And it comes down through the disciplic succession, and then you get the prema. So initiation's required. You come in contact, you get a little interested, then you find a guru. There's so many Gaudiya Vaishnava gurus now on this planet. Some of them even young. But they're proper representatives of the tradition. They're spreading the chanting. They have ashrams where people come and chant Hare Krishna. They're teaching the philosophy of bhakti. And you find some guru you're comfortable with. How do you know who's your guru? Because all the gurus are saying the same thing. Chant Hare Krishna, worship Lord Chaitanya, go to India, go to Rishikesh, go to Vrindavan. And they're speaking about the material world and the spiritual world. So how do you know which one to choose? Because it's Krishna's arrangement. When you hear a particular person speak, and then you go, oh, now I understand. That's your guru. Now it's clear. Am I correct? Well, you're all right. Yeah, of course. But then you find someone who you feel comfortable with. So these two infants in spiritual life, Mihail, he's taking his first initiation. She's taking her second initiation. Initiation, Brahman initiation. Mandali Kishori. Allowing her to chant the sacred Gayatri Mantra, which allows her to worship the deity of the Lord. Westerners think the deity is some statue or some stone or something, but if God's everywhere, is he not also in the deity? And it's especially in the deity because he said, I will be in the deity to accept your service. He is not a statue. He's directly the son of Maharaj Nanda. But to approach him, you have to achieve a certain level of purity. Her temple authorities have told me she's steady in her chanting. She's strict in her principles. She's becoming purified. You can see the glow on her face. So she gets the Gayatri Mantra today. So I'm very happy. I am really nothing. I admit before all of you, my disciples, I am nothing. I'm only the, yeah. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki. On his order, we are doing this performance. Because my experience was that as I grew up in the movement, I was just a lost soul. I came across Prabhupada. But I was asked to go out on Sankirtan one day and tell people about the philosophy. I'd only been a devotee 3 days. I didn't know anything. And I had to go out and distribute books. What's this about? Like, if you sing this song, you become happy. Anything else? Yeah. If you sing the song, what's the song? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama. You become happy. Here I am representing a culture which is 5,000 years old. Because in the Vedic age, only the Brahmins spoke. The other classes, they did other important services for Krishna, but teachers were only Brahmanas. To be born in a Brahmin family, you had to have the sacred thread. Here's this guy who just shaved off his hair and went down to his waist. I had a fantastic mustache. Oh my God. It was brown and it was blonde at the end. It was so hard to shave off. And my beard was cool, you know. And I looked in the mirror, whoa, did I make the right decision? You did. Okay, Hare Krishna. I never really regretted it. And then, because I like to sing and because I learned to drum, so you're the Sankirtan leader. You take the Sankirtan party out every day. This was 21 days after I joined. I have to inspire all the new recruits. They look at me like I'm a guru or something. Have you been a devotee for many years? I got here 2 weeks before you. You know any verses? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. This is true. And then Prabhupada said, you go to France and you introduce the Hare Krishna movement in France. I was 19. Okay. And Prabhupada said, do you know France? I said, no. I said, oui, oui, oui. C'est la vie, whatever will be, the future is not ours to see. C'est la vie. All right, you go to France. He said, you preach on the streets, you make new devotees, you find someone to translate the Bhagavad Gita into French, and you get a preaching center, and you teach them Bhagavad Gita. So for so many years we did that, many, many years. Finally, they said, you become temple president. I had no qualification. A manager? I couldn't manage myself out of a paper bag. But Prabhupada told us one time, along with the instruction of the guru, comes the ability to fulfill it. That doesn't happen in material life. You have to go to school, have the credits, prove yourself. But in spiritual life, along with the instruction comes the ability to fulfill it. So along with the order of the guru, you become representative of Guru Parampara, then you'll have the qualifications to be a spiritual master. And it seems to be working because look at all of your bright faces. And your determination and your strictness in Krishna consciousness. You're well on the path, so we must be doing something right. Actually, we're just passing on, like the flowing river, what we've learned from Śrīla Prabhupāda. He is Param Guru. He is the Guru at whose feet all the Gurus sit. That's the meaning of Prabhupāda. He is the Guru at whose feet all the Gurus sit. So when I leave this world in some years from now, then some of my disciples will also initiate. And when they grow old, they will initiate their disciples. And when they grow old, in this way, the mango will come down from the top of the tree to each person, and when it comes down, it'll be perfectly intact. It won't be bruised. It'll just come down perfectly intact. That's Guru Parampara. So I'm happy to do this service. No problem accepting the karma. Because tonight, I'm going to chant my heart out. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Nam. Knowing that will burn up. But more important, by following these instructions one day, O Govinda, feeling your separation, I'm considering moment to be like 12 years or more. Tears are flowing from my eyes like torrents of rain. I'm feeling all vacant in the world and the absent. That we will all experience by Prabhupada's grace. When the tears come, all our efforts will be achieved. And that will happen one day. He will cry in ecstasy. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Śrī Guru Parampara ki, Lok Prem Dan Harinam Sankirtan Yajna ki, the holy dham of Rishikesh ki, Mother Ganges ki, Shri Gorpurni Maha Mahotsava ki, Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Yuga Avatar, most merciful incarnation Krishna ever ki. Yeah.